Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Rigadonna, and with me, as always,
Richie Byrne. With my hair,
Richie, you are looking slick.
Well, I'm trying to get the mullet showing.
Yeah, you gotta fluff that bitch out.
What?
Fluff it out.
I know, because I'm figuring, hey, it's NASCAR today, baby.
Yeah, it's NASCAR.
Gotta get
NASCAR
the mullet under. Going.
Look at that, baby. Oh, my God. I'm excited to have it on Sports Talk back.
This is really exciting, man. It's going to be a great show, man.
I'm so pumped. It's Monday. Real quick, I wanted to ask, how was your weekend?
My weekend was cool. Guess what I did this weekend, Mark?
I know, but the viewers don't.
I did stand-up comedy. Look at me.
Look at you.
Look at me. I mean, look, I either was doing stand-up comedy or I'm Wyatt Earp. I'm not sure.
Y'all better leave this town.
It was a great show. It was at the Railroad Inn restaurant in Lansdale. I think Lansdale, something like that, Pennsylvania. Linfield. Railroad Street Bar and Grill, which is a great place. Have you been there?
No.
It's not far from Joel's Club in Royersford. And these guys are amazing. They make the best grilled cheese sandwiches you've ever had in your life. I mean, yeah, and they're amazing. And they did a free show, and people parked across the street. And look, you see that, and sat in their chairs and hung out on their cars. And
look at this. There you go, family.
This was the one problem, Mark. It was like people were walking and driving up and down the street. That was the only problem. I'm trying to do my act, and you know. They told me I could curse, and there's little kids walking by.
Well, they said you can. You shouldn't, but you can.
But it was a lot of fun, dude. I really enjoyed it. I had a great
time. How was
it
getting the rust off the...
It wasn't easy. At one point, I actually stood there, and I looked at Joel. Thank God Joel was in the audience. I go, I don't remember my act at all. He was yelling stuff out.
No, Richie, at the end of the bit, you slip on the banana.
Yeah. It was cool. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. It was hard to get a feel for the crowd, but, you know, because they're kind of distant from you. They were so into it, you know, like a couple of times, like even when, are you guys having a good time? They're like, go, man, you're doing great. Like, it was really cool. It was
awesome. Who else were you working with?
Missy.
Missy Gringowitz.
Yeah.
Joel hosted. That's a great show.
Joel had a mic for each of us.
Smart man.
He's on the porch, and everybody's already there, and he's got a mic. He does a sound check. He goes, Richie's mic, like that. And then he pulls it down, and I go, well, now you've talked it to it, Joel. And the crowd heard this, and everybody started laughing.
I love it. Oh, God, I can't wait for comedy to be back for real.
I think this is what it's going to be for a while. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully we get a lot of work this summer just doing outdoor shows, you know?
I saw Don Jameson did a music gig, and the band was in a little cabin, on the porch of a little cabin, and he did stand up from the outhouse. There was like a fake outhouse.
Get out, really? Very cool.
I was like, oh, here we go. It's back.
That's wild, man. Yeah.
I was very pumped up this weekend as well because sports is back.
Yes, it is.
We had our first sport back.
We had two yesterday, but one I didn't care about and one I did. The one I cared about. They had a golf thing yesterday. I didn't care.
Oh, yeah. I don't really watch golf, but I was excited. My boys actually have been to a NASCAR event.
Really?
There we are, the family. We went down down in Dover, and we went to cheer on our guest. This was a couple years ago. Look, the kids, Axel, did not like the loud sounds, but they enjoyed it, and they still talk about it. They still remember it. I can't believe it. They still talk about when they went racing. So when I told them racing was going to be on, they got all excited.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was never a big NASCAR guy until I became friends with our guest. And
right. Before we bring your guest out, I just want to say we have our very first sponsor.
Yes.
Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. Now, Lansdale Tavern in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, right there, 839 West Main Street, 215-362-0460. Owned by our good dear friend, Buddy Harris, and his fiancée, Julie Palermo. And so they're doing takeout right now. They have great food. And we love Buddy. We wish him all the best with this. They just started. I think they only bought this place a few months ago. So
yeah, it's very new that they own it. So
so if you're in the Lansdale area, show Buddy and Julie some love.
Yeah. And so what I wanted to tell you was I actually got into watching NASCAR. And I think I told you about the sketch album I did recently about If Tom Brady. And we have the Tom Brady's number one fan calling all kinds of radio stations to talk about Tom Brady, even though they're maybe not talking about Tom Brady. So we wrote this one. This is our NASCAR episode of If Tom Brady.
Welcome back to Pit Road Radio, where we're all things NASCAR. Big day today. We got lots of stuff to talk about. Bubba, our producer, let's get right to it. We got a call. This is Gary from Boston.
Yeah, how come you're not talking about Tom Brady?
I'm sorry, Gary. We're talking NASCAR.
I know. I was listening.
And I'm not really sure why you're calling.
If Tom Brady drove for NASCAR, he would have won 300 championships by now.
I love me some football, Gary, but I don't really see.
Well, you ever seen Tom Brady roll left? How hard could it be to lean left on a steering wheel four times?
Two different sports, Gary. You don't want to tick off a bunch of NASCAR fans, so Bubba, let's grab us another call.
Tom Brady would win the Brickyard 400 just to hear all the people from Boston say Brickyard, and he wouldn't have to take a four-game suspension for being accused of having not enough air in his tires.
Okay, Gary. Trying to find some common ground here, brother, but I'm not following.
What I'm saying is if Tom Brady drove for NASCAR, he would finish laps faster than a Southie topless hooker on crack.
Gary, let's stick with NASCAR. Besides, I don't know if Tom Brady could fit into a regulation NASCAR anyhow.
If NASCAR wants to be popular, they would find a way to retrofit Tom Brady into a car.
Maybe you could call your local sports talk radio show, because we gotta go.
Nice.
we really enjoyed doing it with the NASCAR.
You and Briscoe, right? Tom Briscoe.
Yeah, Tom Briscoe and I have this character Gary from Boston. So that was a little bit of a shameless promotion. but now, there, shameless promotions.
Joey's always on it.
So let's put that. We're already 8 minutes in. We got to bring this guy out, man. I'm so excited. I met this guy a couple years ago. We became really good friends. His girl is such a sweetheart. Folks, we're bringing him out. Brendan Poole, everybody. Brendan Poole. What's up, man?
Okay, first of all, that the Tom Brady NASCAR pit road, that Mark, that was hilarious, man.
It was.
Thank you, man.
I don't know if you can see me when I'm like waiting to get in, but I was like laughing the whole time. I was like, man,
thank you.
That is so funny. because I have friends that are in Boston and in that area, and the amount of Tom Brady stuff that I get is just ridiculous. It's just Tom Brady all day. I don't know what they're going to do this year now that he's not there, but. No.
They're all going to root for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, they're all going to root for Tampa Bay, exactly.
And clutch timing with me and Briscoe releasing this album just before he announced he was leaving. So that was...
Brady? Oh, yeah. Good timing, yeah.
Well, maybe there won't be a season this year, so we'll have 1 year to ride it out before we have to change it to Tampa Bay. But how excited are you to be back in the car?
Yeah, it was good. I just feel happy that I can do something that's a little bit more normal instead of just, you know, like sim racing on my computer, which like exploded over the last 2 months.
Yeah.
I mean, we were racing on Fox television, like nationally broadcasted TV, and we were, you know, playing a game basically, and like millions of people were watching. I'm like, this is nuts.
Yeah, they got good ratings though, right? For that.
2 million people were watching us play games. I mean, it was
tell me how desperate people were for any sports, man.
It was the most expensive Twitch channel ever.
Yeah, I know, right? You have 2 million people. I mean, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was twitching. You could literally ride on board with him and like listen to him talking to his guys and friends and stuff. And people were eating it up. He did yell at me in the last one because I crashed him in the last race on there. So Junior yelled at me, and so sorry, but it was fun, man. It was a good time. I'm glad that we could entertain people somewhat during that time, but. It just felt good to be able to race. It was a little bit strange not having fans there. You know, the fan, like, it's not like we're in an arena or a stadium or something where
there you are there in front of the car and no stands.
Yeah, you can see I've got my mask on and there's like no fan. This is literally 5 minutes before I got into the car yesterday. And it's just strange because like, but the fans do bring like a certain energy, you know, like you walk.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah,
the adrenaline.
You interact with them on your way, you know, whether you're going to walking through the garage or going out to the grid to get in your car, like you'll always have these like few key moments with certain fans that you run into that are always kind of special. And so not having them there was definitely strange. I can tell you it was a lot easier leaving the racetrack because there was no fans. I didn't sit in traffic on the way home.
Yeah. Zero traffic.
But you know, it was fun, and I'm glad we got to do it. And I saw something today that like you know, like 6.3 million people or something watched yesterday, which was good. Those are good numbers for us. So I feel like everything went good, man.
One of your big fans was David Spade, and he put this up, and we thought it was so cool when me and the kids were watching because we're big fans of David Spade. But he put this video up. I don't know if you had a chance to see it. I put Joey on the spot.
Yeah, I don't think I saw anything from David Spade yesterday. Or
it was
or
like right before the race. But
yeah, right before the race, he put up a little a video. Joey, if you have it, pop us in the private chat. Let us know and we'll show it. But yeah, I got ready to watch it, and it was really weird watching. Okay, there was a glitch. So it was really weird watching because you're watching the cars, but you see the stands are empty. And that's usually part of the fun is like the loud cheering.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
Now, when you're in the car, Brendan, do you feel the crowd at all? Do you have an idea of the crowd being there, or is it just before and after the race?
Yeah. I mean, when you're in the car, you're not really interacting. I mean, you can't, I mean, I can see that there's people in the stands, you know, yeah. But I'm not really, you know, you can't really tell that they're there. I mean, on certain occasions when they're, you know, like, you know, you can kind of hear them cheer if like the whole crowd screams at one time and you're like on the stretch, you can kind of hear it, but not really. I mean, we have earplugs in and guys talking to us, you're sitting in, you know, all, engine, everything's right there. I mean, it's so loud that, you don't really get that, you know, you don't like vibe off of the crowd. Like, you know, I imagine like NBA players and college athletes in an arena and game, you can hear everybody cheering and going nuts.
You're actually the one sport, I never thought of this, you're actually the one sport that doesn't get any feel off of the fans.
No, not really.
Only at the very beginning and the very end.
Yeah. Well, and we're also unique in a way that as an athlete, you know, I'm confined to my vehicle. I'm not tackling another player. I'm not passing a ball or sharing any equipment with anybody else. I'm in my own space, locked in the car for the whole time of the event. Like I can't get out.
There's your ride.
Yeah. So that's actually a new theme for this past week too. So we did this Spartan Mosquito has a new product out and it's called Spartan Mosquito Protect. Guys, I'm telling you, if you've got mosquitoes where you live, the thing, it's ridiculous. It works so well. But we actually, you know, I do a lot of stuff for the veterans with the charity called RED, which is Remember Everyone Deployed. And we actually donated like hundreds of Spartan Mosquito Protect kits, their new product to the veteran operations there in the Darlington area. And so it was awesome to be able to, you know, help out with what we can. And this week, NASCAR, for those that didn't know, you know, I had a nurse named Tatiana from Seattle, and we put her name over the door where my name usually is, just to honor a frontline hero. And every car in the field did that for a frontline worker. So it was cool to be able do that. And
you guys are awesome. And I'm not just kissing your sponsor's ass, but when Lindsay told me that you were sponsored by Spartan, we actually used that at our house. The things that you hang
up. The eradicator, it's like in a tube. It's like a
hang like two of those up in your yard, no mosquitoes. It was awesome. Yeah. Here's what David Spade had to say, speaking of fans.
Okay.
Hey guys, Spade here, and I want to say good luck today in the race, and I know you're going to do great. I miss it. I miss the cars going by. Meow, meow, meow. Meow, 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 meow. That's my ringtone. So do good. Remember, 6 feet apart. I understand. Keep the cars a little spaced. Maybe decide up front who wins just to keep it fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's funny, man. And it's cool that those guys are NASCAR fans. You know, we've had him and Adam Sandler and some of those guys that run around in that crew come to the track and do the, you know, give the command for us to fire engines and stuff. So it's cool to have some of those guys that you watch and enjoy and like their movies. I mean, Joe Dirtie, I mean, who haven't forgotten that, you know? But to have those guys be fans and be tuning in, like, it's crazy. You don't think about it when you're just performing and doing your job, but you know, a lot of people tuned in yesterday to watch us do what we love to do, and that's pretty cool.
That's really cool, man. Now listen, Mark, we're way into this, and
we haven't got to the drink or the
joke yet. So what are you drinking, brother? What do you got there?
I've got a little Blanton's bourbon. That's my favorite favorite bourbon. I like it, you know, and especially during the quarantine, you know, over the last 2 months, I about went through it. Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to savor it and everything, cause it's hard to get, man. You can't find this stuff. It's difficult to find, but, that's definitely my favorite drink. It's just like Blanton's and maybe like, you know, two or three ice cubes and I'll sip. Perfect.
How about you, Richie?
You know what? Today I'm here in New York. It was really warm for the first time, and it just felt like a summer day, finally.
Yeah.
So I got a little Sam Adams Summer Ale.
Ooh.
All right.
Yeah. I'm screwing that up here. There it is.
I'm doing like the exact opposite of you guys. You guys are doing such a like fun summer, nice, relaxing drink. I have a Milano espresso with a little bit of cappuccino. The froth, and I threw a little Kahlua in.
It better be Kahlua.
Yeah.
It's homemade Kahlua.
Chill, Mark.
Dude, it's homemade Kahlua. It's made from grain alcohol. This stuff,
all right. All right. That's
the
great.
The paint's going to come off my teeth.
So there's the drink.
You know, that's how you're going to be talking about NASCAR. That's how NASCAR got started, is those guys bootlegging, racing, they're running white liquor, okay?
That's right.
Yeah. Is that true? I've heard stories like that. Is that really true?
That's true. If you go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte, they have a whole deal up for that Junior Johnson, like, built, and he built like a distillery, like a how he made white liquor, I guess, in the woods back in the day, like when NASCAR was basically starting. But yeah, no, that's true. Basically, like, all these guys were, you know, talking smack about whose car was faster than the other guy's car when they were, like, you know, running from the cops and stuff with the white liquor. So they started racing each other. And then it just kind of became like competition between one another. And more people just started getting into their cars and racing. And that's what it turned into, man. I mean,
just another reason why alcohol is a great thing.
Exactly. Bringing NASCAR together. You know, I always thought it funny because the Northeast NASCAR isn't as big. Everywhere else in the country, when I'm on the road, everybody's in the NASCAR. Like Sunday, I would go down to a bar to watch football, and half of the people that are there to watch NASCAR. And this is when I was really young. And then I got, do you remember the Speed Network? I think they're still around.
Yeah. Some of the first races I ran when I first started racing nationally and professionally, it was still on Speed Channel back in like 2011, 2012. It was still Speed Channel before Fox bought it. Now it's Fox Sports One.
I did a bunch of commercials for the show Pink's. I was like,
okay, yeah.
And I did all their coming up on Speed.
That was you. That's crazy. I didn't know that. I've seen the show.
And they were based out of Hoboken, New Jersey. I'm like, what Guido in Hoboken, New Jersey is in the motocross and NASCAR? But I think more people watch NASCAR than any other sport. It's amazing.
There's a lot of NASCAR fans, man.
It's like as soon as you leave New Jersey, Yeah. NASCAR's everywhere.
As soon as you make a ride into Pennsylvania, it's all NASCAR all the time.
I think the sport's been growing a lot here over the past couple years. You know, we're starting to tap into some interesting markets. You know, NASCAR has the figures, but, you know, some of our, like, areas where, like, we have a lot of interest is Colorado. And in, like, Portland, Oregon, like, the interest is high because, you know, IndyCar goes to Portland, but NASCAR is yet to go there. So I think you'll see in the coming years NASCAR started to branch out. Maybe, you know, we might race in some different markets in the future. We've got a new race car coming out. You know, we were trying to shoot for 2021 next year, but because of everything that's happened, it's going to be 2022. But I think you're going to see some interesting things happen in our sport in the next coming years. And interesting enough, like Los Angeles is like one of our biggest markets. Like we have such a huge following out there and we do race there in Fontana. It's like an hour from downtown LA. So, and the fans there are just, man, it's insane. And there's people camping out in the infield and partying and just like, you know, we just like we go and race anywhere else, but you wouldn't think that, but it's true. So it's been cool to be a part of it. And, you know, of course I get to see it firsthand. I travel all over the country and go to all these different markets and see, you know, see the different types of engagement. So, it's cool.
Now, can I ask a question? How long since, I mean, this, you guys raced yesterday. How long before you found out that was coming down? It was definitely happening. How much time?
Well, I mean, we were all prepared as if it was going to happen regardless, you know? So, I mean, the teams went back to work 2 weeks ago. And started prepping the cars and getting them ready because pretty much no one had been in the shop for 2 months. So, you know, I got to go to the shop a little bit and kind of like sit in my race car and make sure everything's comfortable this past week. And, you know, there was no practice, no qualifying, no nothing. So
yeah,
we drove our car on a chassis dyno, made sure everything was tuned with the engine, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, normally things we would do at the racetrack and to actually practice the car. But since, you know, we weren't going to do that, we had to do it differently this week. Wow. But, you know, I had my rookie meeting. You know, I'm a rookie. It's my first year in the NASCAR Cup Series. So,
oh, wow, cool.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thanks. So they had all the rookies on a phone call Saturday, and we all talked about all the processes and if we had any questions or, you know, where we needed to go. But, you know, we had to go through some medical checks and things before they let us into the track.
We had to break getting tested.
There's me getting my temperature taken through the first gate. That was the second gate of being allowed into the track. And then I had to go through another gate to get into the infield. And then I basically, once you went through all that and they knew that you were healthy or didn't have any symptoms of the virus, I just sat in my car, man, the whole day. I have a vlog, actually. I filmed my experience. It's going to be dropping tonight. So you can kind of see the behind the
scenes. Tell us where people can go check it out.
Yeah, it's going to be on my YouTube channel. It's just Brennan Poole. If you just search me on YouTube. And I have other vlogs if you guys want to check those out from a couple of years ago. You know, the vlogs are a lot of work, but I wanted to –
You do a really good job with it.
Thank you.
You have a lot of production behind it, which makes it really exciting.
A lot of copying Casey Neistat is what I did through that. I try to do some behind the scenes. A lot of it is me in my car. I sat in my car yesterday for 4 hours before I could drive because we weren't allowed to go. The drivers were totally not allowed to be around anybody. Some drivers had their motorhomes there. I don't have a motorhome yet. So I just like hung out in my Tahoe and played on my phone. I called and talked to some people. And I literally got dressed, put my fire suit and everything on in the back seat of my Tahoe and walked out to the grid. And we did the prayer and the national anthem, and I jumped in and raced. So I just bolted straight to my truck and drove home. I mean, there was no, you know, there just wasn't anybody there but essential race personnel and medical workers. I mean, that was it, you know.
Wow. Interesting.
So I grew up down the street from one of your friends. I grew up about 4 miles down the road from the Blaney's.
Yeah. They were big in that area, or Dave Blaney and the Pennsylvania Posse or whatever with the sprint car racing and all that.
I grew up right next to the Sharon Speedway. You could hear it at night. You could hear the cars going.
That's awesome.
The Blaney's were like the people, you know, they were the kings.
Well, man, they're good. I mean, Dave was really good. His dad was a great race car driver and great in the sprint cars. And Ryan's been a really good racer. I've raced with him a lot when I was younger and coming through the ranks because we're about the same age. And you know, we race against each other now on Sundays, which is uh, which is cool. You know, a lot of these guys that I'm competing against, you know, at least a lot of the younger guys, the guys around my age, you know, we've been racing each other since we were 12, 13 years old. You know, we all started when we were, you know, probably five or so. But as you start like moving forward and traveling around and racing, it's kind of like the same guys and the guys that you were racing against and guys that were winning one week and you were winning the next week and so forth and so on. Like
Little League with gasoline.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's you know, and so we end up still competing against each other, you know, all these years later. It's
I think we have a video of you as a kid. Look at you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's me and my dad buckling me in there. This is actually in California, I think, somewhere in probably Sacramento wow. area. That's where I started.
And you're originally from Texas, right?
Yeah, I grew up in Texas. We moved to Texas when I turned seven, like the week after we got there. So I raced about almost 2 years in California, and then we moved to Texas. And you know, I mean, I was so little. I mean, I pretty much was raised a Texan, man. Like that's I say I'm from Texas, you know.
Right.
Yeah. How do you really get involved at that age? How do you know this is something I want to do? I mean, obviously all kids love go-karts, but how did you know, yeah, I'm going to get competitive?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I think that, you know, I knew at a young age, it's just what I wanted to do. It was in my heart. And, I just worked so hard at it and I was winning a lot of races, like right off of the bat. And I just kept that ambition and drive to be successful. I think I always knew that I was going to make it somehow, some way. I just knew that this is what I was destined to do. So I, you know, I've had a lot of ups and downs in my career. Many of my fans and many people that are close to me know, you know, there are years, you know, off and on, even after making it, where I wasn't sure if I was going to race again. I mean, I worked three jobs in racing after kind of like doing like what single A baseball is, which was very successful. I won a speedway championship. I've won six races. Like it wasn't like I wasn't performing. So, you know, there are a lot of things that were challenging, and been fortunate enough that God's opened the doors for me at the right times and put me in the right positions to be able to continue, you know, fighting for this. And man, I mean, a couple years ago, if you asked me if I'd been in Cup right now, I don't know if I'd tell you that I'd be here, but I just kept working towards it. And you know, unfortunately, the right partners and the right people have come on board and believed in me to give me the opportunity to race at the highest level. So it's my dream. I got to race the Daytona 500 this year, which was awesome.
Wow.
So, yeah, man. I mean, so just that's to get so new, awesome. I dreamed about when I was that little kid in that video. It's pretty cool.
Who were your idols? I'm sorry, Mark. Who were your idols growing up? Did you have any like?
Yeah, I always looked up to Jeff Gordon. In California, the first race car I ever drove, that first quarter midget I ever drove, was at a little dirt track in Rio Linda called Capital, and that was the first place he ever drove. So I kind of had that in common with him.
Okay, cool.
So him kind of dominating NASCAR at that time. My dad and I, we just kind of followed, you know, what, you know, kind of sort of similar steps of what he did as far as the mental aspects of the sport and things he would talk about. You know, I didn't go and race sprint cars and midgets and do that. After I did quarter midgets, I kind of went a little bit different route. My parents thought it would be safer for me because at the time sprint cars, and even to this day, I have one of my really good buddies who I raced against and we were teammates, in the ARCA when I raced in the ARCA Menard series. You know, he got injured really bad in sprint cars, and I lost another friend a couple of years ago. Actually, got killed in a midget. They're just very dangerous cars.
The first race I ever went to it in Sharon, that was sprint car, and somebody passed away.
Really,
Chris, man, yeah, they're so fast, and there's not a lot surrounding you, and it's just they're dangerous. So my parents didn't want me to do it, and so we went a different route. But so I tried to follow. In the footsteps of those guys, you know, and my dad wasn't a big racer. I'm a first generation race car driver. He didn't know anything about racing. We didn't know anything about racing at the start. Like when I first drove, I didn't even know it was like to hug the bottom of the corner. Like we knew literally nothing. So it was just a lot of work, learn things the hard way. But I think that's ultimately what made me a better race car driver and a better business guy. I think people forget, you know, NASCAR is a big business. Like, it's a sport and we're competitors and, you know, we're athletes and we train and we do all the normal things. But you know, there's sponsors involved and sponsors are what make the race cars go around the track. And
that was going to be my next question is there a route to go to find sponsors? Cause I know they're hard to come by and it's difficult to make that work. Is there a regular route you go by, or is it kind of like, you know, like it's the same, I guess, with comedians? They go, you know, why aren't you in a movie? Why don't you just be on Saturday Night Live? Like, oh, I didn't think of that.
Well, I think, I mean, sponsors are definitely challenging to find. It's difficult. I think it's going to be even more challenging in the next year after having gone through this pandemic. It's just going to be tough. But I don't think there's any right way to go about it. I think if you're a race car driver and you're trying to make it right now, I think first and foremost is winning. I think ultimately winning a lot gets you opportunities to show what you can do. And then I think once you've kind of established yourself and sort of made it into one of the top three series and you're racing and performing and doing well and contending, you can sort of use that to your advantage to sell yourself and what you're able to do. And you know, there are still sponsors and still people that are interested in the sport. I mean, we have a huge following. Like I said, you know,
way six to get eyes on.
Watched. I think the Daytona 500, it was like 12, 13 million people tuned in to watch. So, you know, as far as sports goes, it's still one of the highest. Our sport, as far as fans go, you know, we have some of the most loyal fans to, you know, like brand loyalty is just insane. Like, if you sponsor in the sport and you're a NASCAR fan, they stick to the brands that sponsor in the sport. They just do, and I know all of us appreciate them doing that. You know, and what's unique about our sport is we're almost 50-50 male female fans, which is no other it's crazy. I don't know if it's just because we're guys wearing race suits that drive fast or what, or if they like it or not, I don't know, but
that's name on here. I'm a waffle belly. They call the groupies for comics chuckle fuckers, and they call groupies for NASCAR waffle bellies because they're leaning against the fence.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Is that why you put it in as waffle belly today? Because it's a NASCAR episode, or is that?
I put it Racer X because I grew up in New York, and the only racing I knew was Speed Racer, the cartoon. Racer was his brother, and he was cool.
If you look back at that video of me getting into that car, you'll see on the side of my car, it says the Mach 5. I was number 5 for Fred.
Very cool.
Wait for it. And then you'll see it right on the nose cone here. You can see the
part. I remember seeing it. Yeah.
There it is. There it is. I was a huge Speed Racer guy, and I was number 5, like a lot of my career. And then I also ran number 17 was my number. But most of my stock car career, when I was starting to get noticed, you know, I ran the number 5. So
when you're driving, is this the scariest thing you can see in your rear view window? When you're...
that wasn't...
there's a few guys that start coming up behind you. You start being a little concerned or, worried about them, I guess. You know, there's always, we call them squirrels, you know.
It would be this guy here. Hold on. That was my son the other day in the car. He gave me the look of death in the rearview mirror. I'm like, I got to take a picture of this.
What happened? That's true. Are there racers that you go, this guy's an asshole, I gotta be careful?
Yes. Yeah. We all have certain guys race you one way all the time and you just kind of know what to expect. And then I think the biggest thing that we fight is guys that race you differently all of the time and you have like no idea what they're gonna do or what to expect. But like certain drivers have tendencies, just like certain players have certain tendencies, and film, and I know what guys are gonna do on restarts. I know what moves certain guys do at certain times. So you're just like ready for it, you know, depending on what situation you're in. So
is that something you study film on all the racers, or is it just you've been going against them so much that you just learn their tendencies?
A lot of times, you watch film on the guys that you're not used to racing. You know, like being a rookie this year, there's a lot of guys in the Cup Series that I'm racing against for the first time. So you try to watch film and learn what they're going to do. But there are a lot of guys that I've been racing against coming up that I kind of know what they're going to do. But everyone learns stuff every time they're in the race car, and they do things differently because you learn stuff from other competitors. You know, I've raced side by side with Kyle Busch for the last several years, but you know, he may do something at a certain track that I may not have experienced yet or haven't been right in that situation yet because I am a rookie. And I'm like, oh man, he like freaking waxed my ass on that one thing. I need to do that differently next time I'm in that situation. And I'll write it down in my notes. And I'll go back and look at the film. You know, a lot of guys have onboard cameras. I had an onboard camera for years, so I could like sit there and watch myself for the whole race and see what I did wrong in certain situations and learn from it so I don't make that mistake later on. You know, we do it. I mean, it's the same like any sport, you know, baseball guys watching pitchers and certain things, and football players watching other teams and other players and what they do. I mean, we do the same things.
So it's kind of cool, and I'm going to bring something full circle here. So we're talking about sports. How I met Brennan and Lindsay was I went to a Phillies game. I got asked to hang out in the box at a Phillies game with a friend of ours from the show, Craig Gass.
Yeah.
And I bump into these guys, and we just start talking. And next thing you know, I find out Lindsay's father and Craig have done business together in radio. And
oh, then really?
I start talking to Brennan. He knows the Blaney family, which I grew up near. And then Lindsay is a good friend of our friend Dina Blizzard, who also has been on the show.
Yeah, oh, Craig.
So it's like
a guest for us. Yeah.
It's such a small world of how we all came together. And then I was a producer on a film called Dark State. And Brendan had a part there, and that's Lindsay all the way to the left, and then that's KO, who is the lead actress, and then Brendan, and then that's Nick Berulli, who is the lead man in it.
Yeah.
And, so fun. We got to hang out this summer.
Nick was the actor in I'm Dying Up Here, right?
And Fosse Verdon.
And right, but yeah, he played a comic in I'm Dying Up Here. That's funny. Now, is there real? I'm just wondering. When going back to sponsors for a minute, is there a certain amount of sponsors that you're allowed to have? Do they limit you? Like, or can you get as many sponsors as you want? And you know, how does that work?
The races are all sort of valued. You know, the races all kind of have a certain value on them. So, like per race, teams are selling them for a certain amount, and different teams you know, different rates. Obviously, if you're the best team at the time and you have the best driver at the time, the demand to sponsor them is a little bit higher, so they can charge a little bit more money, right? You know, if you're up front and you're winning races, you get a little bit more media, you get a little bit more time on TV and interviews after when you win and stuff like that. So that costs more money because you're getting more exposure. So sponsors will pay for certain guys and certain teams differently. So it just kind of depends, you know. I'm kind of being developed. So the way that my sponsorship stuff work, it's kind of developing me and my brand right now in order to be in a position, you know, hopefully in the next year, the following years, to be able to go up there and race and win championships and races. So I'm sort of being developed at this moment in time.
Right.
So and that's good for me. You know, I'm learning a lot. I'm not in the best equipment. So like our team, you know, anytime that we can finish inside the top 30 out of 40 cars, that's a really good day for us. So we finished 27th yesterday. That's like a fantastic day. Like everyone is ecstatic, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of my goals. And I know if I don't make any mistakes and I learn as much as possible and I do a good job on pit road and I have no problems, and then I've done my job, right? And I'm learning these things as we go. So in the following years, when I am in a position to be able to win races, I can go and make that happen.
Is there an age where guys retire or think about retiring, or is it vary? Yeah,
it varies. I think for the most part, I'd say on average is around 45 years old. I think that's about the time when a lot of race car drivers start losing reaction time.
Start wearing real big glasses and hats and driving like this.
Yeah. I think it's just like, you know, you lose that little bit and that's the difference from being able to really contend week in and week out. And you know, you see guys like Jeff Gordon who retired right around 44, and Jimmy Johnson's there now, and he'll be retiring at the end of this year. Kevin Harvick is one that's just
he won last night.
Yeah, he won yesterday, and he just signed a contract extension for another 3 years. So he's looking well. He's looking at almost 46, 47 years old at the end of his next contract. So there are some guys. Mark Martin went until he was like 50, which is pretty rare. I mean, he's like kind of the oldest one to be who've done it that long and be competitive the whole time. I mean, he was like 59, 50 years old, and still he won like 5 races 1 year. I mean, he was, you know, that's just kind of.
It was just embarrassing when he'd leave the turn signal on.
Yeah, just like left it on. The guy in second is like, oh my God, this idiot's blinker still on.
Now, when you retire, is there a musical career in your future? What's going on with the guitar behind you? Because
this is a limited edition Les Paul, too. This
nice.
Is my favorite guitar. I've got it hung on the wall here. I don't play it that much. I play a lot more acoustic. It's downstairs in my living room. I'll pick it up and play. I'm not like the crazy good guitar player. I just, you know, I can play a few songs and I'll jam out a little bit. But, you know, I it's just something I do for fun. I don't take it too seriously.
I actually hung out with Les Paul a couple of times, which was one of the coolest things in my career to say I did that.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, music is something I'm passionate about. I wish I was better at it. I wish I could sing good. I wish I could do it. My mom's side of the family, my uncles, they all play guitar and they're like incredible. I'm like, where did that come from? My dad can't sing at all, so I must have got it from him. I'm like tone deaf or something.
Well, in wrapping, we want to thank you so much for coming.
We didn't get
on.
The joke.
Oh yeah. You guys want to hear a coronavirus joke?
Yes.
I do.
You guys, you probably won't get it.
I think I told it before, but since he has the limited edition guitar there, a woman is in front of a judge. She just beat her husband to death with his classic guitar collection, and the judge looked at the woman and said, "First offender?" And she goes, "No, a Gibson, and then a Fender." That was for the guitar, right?
You have that joke about me too on your last album.
Absolutely, we're gonna go out on it. When we go out, we'll play that before we go to the closing credits.
Yeah, we come prepared, Brennan. We come prepared.
We gotta have you back on, and maybe you could maybe throughout the season you could give us some tips and tell us what's going on. And
that'd be great.
Have our viewers get a taste, because I think it's insanely important that we have you on here, and you can kind of teach us a little more about NASCAR. We can talk history.
And just sports coming back in general is important.
And so is the schedule going to be the same now?
You don't even really understand the schedule that well. So I'm racing Wednesday again, and it'll be on Fox again, so you guys can tune in. It's only going to be – it's 500 kilometers this time, so it's like 300 miles or something. It's a little bit shorter. But we're trying to make up some races. So, you know, we're not going to Chicago this year or Sonoma in Northern California. We're making up a Texas race date, I believe, too. So we're like making up races we've already missed so that we can kind of like get caught up. And then sort of when things open back up more along the country, we can kind of go back and have our normal playoffs. You know, we have a 10 race playoff at the end of the season that I know NASCAR would really like to keep those 10 races the same. We'll see what happens. I'm going to be running the Coca-Cola 600 in a week on Sunday. I'm running the truck race Tuesday after that. I'm going to run, dude, my schedule is crazy. I'm going to run 600 miles on Sunday, turn have Monday off, race 250 miles on Tuesday, and then do another 500-kilometer cup race on Wednesday. So I'm doing like 1,000 miles in 3 days or something.
Brennan's basically a road comic.
Yeah,
that's pretty much.
A much cooler car.
Yeah. And better chicks.
I can have fun. I may say a few jokes on the radio here and there. And, you know, Mark, you also forgot to mention, too, you helped me do a stand-up act. Like, you helped
That's right.
create my act, and I did it. and it went really well. I don't think I'm going to do it again. What you guys do is ridiculous. It's like I had like 4 Crown and Cokes before I went up there and let it rip. But it went really well. I got a lot of laughs. And because of it, Mark, you helped me win tickets to go back there for like another show to like watch real comics, not me on an open mic night. But they, and I got like a free dinner, like date meal night thing out of it with Lindsay at the comedy club. So I appreciate that.
Dude, we got to have you back on.
You had four Crown and Cokes before you went up?
Yeah, I did. It might have been
the same thing if I had a race.
Yeah. Oh, man. I know. I started the joke too with what Mark used in his album, which I guess I don't know if you're playing when we leave out, but I started it off that way and I got some laughs. It's easy when you make fun of yourself first to get everybody, you know,
on your side
and, you know, lightened up and get the crowd moving a little bit. But those open mic nights are hard because you got other comics in there and they don't want to laugh at your stuff, even if it is funny. So, like, it's tough, man. They're tough out. And Charlotte in general, I hear from, you know, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I feel like they have tough crowds. I don't know if you guys have performed here or not. I think you have, Mark, right?
I have
2 years ago.
Crowd. Yeah, it's just challenged. They're like, you better be funny or like, you know.
Two of the hardest cities I think to do is Charlotte and Nashville.
I can see that. Nashville, I guess, is a similar type crowd.
They have a high expectation.
Yeah, high expectations. Like, you know. I
think, Mark, guy races cars for a living. He's telling us our job is hard. Seriously,
I know.
I do. It's hard. You guys have. It's a challenging. I'm not gonna say mine's not. I gotta like basically ride a bicycle and run and work out every day, and then drive cars for 600 miles next to. I was talking to my dad last night on the way home. I'll tell you the story real quick. But my dad called me, and I was like, "Yeah, you know, the race went really well. You know, I said it was tough. It was kind of an up and down day, but we still finished strong." And I was like, you know, it was still, you know, it was a lot of fun, you know, racing up against the wall, like going 180 miles an hour. I'm like, I feel blessed. I got to do what I love to do. He's like, well, I think you're crazy, but yeah, I guess that was pretty cool because, you know, I think it's fun. He thinks I'm nuts.
He goes, I'd rather just watch it on the Dukes of Hazzard, not my son do it live.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we're going to have you back on because I definitely think it would be interesting for you to teach us how the scoring process works, how the playoffs work. You can walk us through and make it a regular thing.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back, man. You're great. Yeah,
anytime, let me know. I'm here, man. I love talking, as you can tell.
You're good at it, dude.
Hey, don't leave the studio, but we're going to cut out. Give Lindsay a big hug from us.
I will.
We got to talk about that. Lindsay and I's project and all that kind of stuff. So, folks, that was Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
I was never really into it. I became friends with a guy who races NASCAR, and he told me this. He told me this in privacy. He doesn't want it to get out. His name's Brendan Poole. He told me they actually are in that car for so long, like 4 hours, and it is like 120 degrees inside the car, and they have to drink a ton of fluid because they're just sweating the entire time. So they have to drink a ton of fluid. I'm like, well, what do you got to do when you pee? And he goes, we just pee our pants. It evaporates because it's so hot in there. And he's like, but don't let anyone know that. Hey, dude, you're 26 years old. I'm 36. I piss my pants driving home from a bar.
Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and